Welcome to NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with your host, Dee Klein. Hey, this is NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with Dee Klein. Today I had a couple of guests from the guild join me, Rutger van der Toss and Niels Brojot.
Niels, welcome.
Hi.
And can you teach me again the pronunciation of your last name, because I'm afraid to say it wrong.
Niels Brojot.
Niels Brojot.
Yeah, I make the joke like a prostate is a prostat, brochat, but that doesn't go in English.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, language exclusive jokes that doesn't translate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, and I was telling Niels, I am actually Dutch by heritage, like by blood, but I was never taught Dutch as a child. I learned French as a child because I live in Canada.
Cool.
But I kind of resent it. And I've told my parents, hey, like, what gives? Like, why didn't you teach me Dutch? And they just kind of grew up, you know, believing that you had to kind of become a part of the culture where you were living. And so for them, the idea of teaching us Dutch kind of was like an exclusion type thing. And it's like, no, that's not true at all. Right? So they kind of missed the boat on that one. I kind of wish that, you know, I had learned Dutch as a child.
Yeah. I think the language is going to be extinct eventually, because it's a pretty complicated language, and it has become even more complicated because of the grammar. And there's a lot of English influence that just rooted in the Dutch language now. So like my kids, I have three kids, and they speak like half English, half, you know, but they don't, these are all, it's like street youngster talk.
Okay.
But it will find its way, I guess, in the language. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess if you're looking globally, I mean, there was a period of time that Dutch kind of spread around the world, right?
Yeah.
So I think it'll hang around for a while.
Yeah. I don't think it's the best time, you know, for the Dutch. If you look back at that period, we were pretty ruthless then, you know. We're the
well, that's
most
true
powerful.
Of pretty much any colonial power, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's only now that we're starting to realize how terrible it really was.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy. And I don't even think that we are fully aware.
No.
I think in the States they are, this is a far bigger issue than in the Netherlands, although of course here it is an issue too. Mm. But you have this this beautiful woman, Jane Elliott. She's a teacher. Mm-hmm. You probably know her.
I've heard the name.
Jane Elliott. She's an authority when it comes to discussing these problems. And she's really insightful, actually. And yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it just, you know, I remember growing up learning about all these colonial leaders and, like, you know, the founders of, say, in my case, in Canada, founders of the country, and kind of learning about them with, like, a certain degree of admiration. And now you kind of find out a little bit more of what they were really like. And you're like, wow, these are pretty bad people, really.
Yeah, you know? I don't even know.
And some of the things that they did to, like, for example, the indigenous peoples of Canada, terrible. Yet they're held in high regard. They're on our currency. There are statues of them, you know?
Okay. Yeah, who did what, actually? Because the Dutch went to Asia and South America, but also the North America, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But who did what? I don't even know. What I do know is that the churches where they find the all these mass graves in Canada, that got to us in the news.
That was, I mean, here's the thing, you know, the sad thing is it's kind of been known for a long time, but with this kind of recent technology where they've been scanning the earth, it's kind of this confirmation of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, it's,
but I guess I figure that terrible. when like Europeans went to Canada, United States and whatnot, and did all these horrifying things, then there must be like tons of places all over Europe and the world where you would find these mass graves, right? Yeah.
But Niels, this is the most shocking thing about this. You know, we talk about it like it's this distant past thing. Those residential schools in Canada, the last one closed in 1996.
Oh my God.
1996.
It's like 30 years ago.
Yeah. Like, no, that's where even. It's like, how is that possible? Like, when I was growing up in junior high, there were children from Indigenous communities that were going to those residential schools.
Oh my God.
Who were abused. Some of them tried to escape. Some of them were killed. Some of them died there. Right?
Oh my God.
Isn't that awful?
Yeah,
like,
it is.
You tend to think of it as like, oh yeah, that was centuries ago. Of course it was horrible. Everybody was horrible centuries ago. Do you know what I mean? Like, we kind of dismiss it that way because it's this far away thing. But there are people my age who were teenagers who went through that.
It's bizarre. And also, you know, and we're talking about, so 96 right now, but I'm sure the bizarreness is still going on, you know, the horror.
Well, and it's a generational thing, right? I mean, you have people who live through that who, you know, you don't just get over that. You hear that sometimes. No. People will say that. It's like, oh, it's time to get over those kinds of problems. Like, it doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't. Yeah.
Talking generations of abuse.
Yeah.
Systematic.
It's funny because that's like one of those lessons that Jane Elliott taught me. I have to make a comparison that is a little bit closer by to me. So my father was German and he was born in 1941. So during the Second World War, and he is not to blame, of course, for the war, not at all.
Right.
But he carried the shame on his shoulders, and I think most Germans still do. But on the other side of the border, so in the Netherlands, my grandparents were pretty traumatized by the Second World War. And the entire generation didn't want to talk about what was going on. So their children, my mother and her two brothers, but actually the entire generation, they wanted to know what was going on, but nobody was talking about it. So they have this second generation trauma. But the Second World War ended in 1945. So if you think about other kinds of trauma that still go on, for instance, discrimination, racism, that still goes on. So you can say, you know what, colonialism ended back then, and you can name a year, but it's still going on. So the trauma goes over generations, but it will proceed even longer because there's no end to it. And that is something I think most Dutch don't understand. And it's a new lesson to me too. You know, just I found out, like, I came to this insight just over a week ago. So I guess I have a lot to learn still. Yeah.
Well, and in Canada, we need to kind of come to grips with this because, you know, globally speaking, Canada kind of has this reputation of being this squeaky clean country where everybody's happy and nice.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, no, Canada has done its share of terrible things to people. Right.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's like we shouldn't talk about countries. It's human behavior.
Yes.
Oh, it's.
I just mean, you know, Canada generally does have that image, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. To me, it too. Yeah.
And I mean, I have to say, like, now when I go past like a statue downtown of like, say, John A. Macdonald, who is one of the founders of Canada, but also one of the strongest proponents of the residential school system, I do not look at him with any degree of admiration.
No, I am. Yeah. Neither do I, because I don't know these people. But I don't think we need to tear down these statues. I think we should add something to them, you know. You should resolve that with art. For instance, build a cage over them, or flip them upside down, or give them another color. You know, do something that's more intelligent, because destroying art was never the best solution. Never.
Interesting. So you're saying do something transformative.
Yeah. Because then the message, then there's a dialogue, you know, between the wrong and the good. When the good, of course, seeing from our eyes in this time, I'm sure the people that did all these horrors thought they were on the good side.
Right. Sure. Of course. Yeah. I mean, we constantly are kind of, you know, we're in a bubble where we don't really see what's actually going on outside of us.
Absolutely.
In our view, we're like, oh, yeah, this is the right thing to do, you know?
I think Jordan, you must know Jordan Peterson. Mm-hmm. He's a Canadian.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has something to say about that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to escape that, right? Because, you know, you can't escape your own view of the world, really.
Yeah. And he said, Peterson said, like, there's so much factual facts are surrounding us. And, far more than we can grasp. So we have this narrowed scope and call it a bubble, and we try to form our opinions and our facts from that small little bubble. Mm. And social media, of course, isn't really helpful, because if you see something that you really like and you give it a like or a heart or whatever, the algorithm will give you more of that. So,
sure.
The algorithms and make the bubble even smaller.
The classic echo chamber problem.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Still, you know, I kind of think, you know, we need to, at least in Canada, look more seriously at, like, criminal charges, at compensation for victims. Again, this is a recent thing. There are still, for example, there are still priests, nuns, Catholic Church leaders alive today who were part of this abusive system.
Oh my God.
And they're none of them have been charged with anything.
So how do you think?
So there has to be criminal charges, I feel. And there has to be compensation coming from particularly the Catholic Church, which facilitated the majority of these residential schools. But there were also other churches that did it. And those churches have benefited financially tremendously over the course of time. I mean, the Catholic Church, that's one of the wealthiest entities in the world that I can think of.
Yeah.
There has to be compensation for those people. You're talking people who survived it, who, I mean, it scarred them for life.
I think even their children should be compensated.
Sure, I agree. Yeah. It should be passed down to those families. It's not like the Catholic Church couldn't afford it.
No. No. They're very powerful. They have their
own.
Well,
and they're in a position where they can't really fully admit to it either.
You know, that's like a pill they have to take. Because sooner or later, they will, of course, because you cannot keep up with this shit. So sooner or later, they have to.
Yeah.
And I reckon better sooner than later. You know,
yes.
If you really want to make a step forward, and it will, it's not only the Catholic Church, you know, there are so many different sides that need some cleaning.
Yep.
So if a large body goes through that shaming, more will follow. So the sooner the better, I guess.
But you know, just when you look at the church as a whole, like there was I don't know if you've ever heard of the Beaverton. It's kind of a joke newspaper. Have you ever heard of The Onion? They're kind of like spoof newspapers. They kind of make fun of things.
Yeah.
And they had the joke newspaper. The one that they had was this guy who was a Satanist, you know, and he's like, I don't know if we're doing enough evil here, man. We can't keep up with the Catholic Church. Like they're making us look bad. You know,
yeah.
I can't keep up with that level of evil.
God.
And it's true, like,
yeah, my uncle said one time, yeah, God invented the universe and men invented the church.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, there's needs to be some serious action happening there, but there's growing public sentiment for it.
And that's what politicians listen to is, you know, it doesn't matter what's morally right or wrong. It's, okay, what are people interested in so I can get elected again, you know? So
yeah,
you kind of have to put that public pressure there or else it doesn't happen.
It's a sad thing that that's the main thing on their agenda, because there is so much work to be done and it always comes on second place. So
yeah, it's the self-preservation. Man, this is a heavy, heavy discussion here we're having.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice to meet you, Darren.
Yeah. It's the first time we've spoken.
Yeah.
Just came from the fact that we both had Dutch in our blood in the background.
Yeah, cool.
So anyway, that's a heavy, heavy, heavy topic. But let's talk art. I mean, you talked a little bit about it having a transformative effect on things. What drew you into art in the first place in general?
Ooh, I think I was always a little bit of misfit, but I'm very social. So I can, I liked being the outcast, and it was not like an outcast, but I was a little bit off. And I have the tendency to think stuff over and over and over again. So and as a child I was kind of creative, and my mother was always cool with that, and my father too, my entire family actually, and that helps, you know, if you have the support of your family to be quirky and to do what you like to do, that really helps. Because I think we start off as children to be very creative, and then most of us are taught out of creativity.
It's so true.
That's a bad thing. Yeah. You're a teacher, right?
Yes.
Yes. So keep that dream alive with your students. Yeah. and so I tried some stuff. I was into sports earlier, but I just had to follow my heart and went to pursue my creative dreams and became an artist.
Mm-hmm. And with your art in particular, I mean, if people are looking for your art, they can find... Oh, hey! Ruby's joining us here.
There he is.
Yeah, I'll let him in here. To find your art, they can find you basically... Easiest way is probably Twitter, right? You know, they can hop on Twitter and find you at Brozat, Brozat, Niels.
Yes.
It's and really from there, you got your link tree. And Ruby is joining us here. Ruby's okay, right?
Audio.
Yeah. Well, we can continue while he gets that sorted there.
I try to be as easy to find as possible.
Mm-hmm. So, I always find that interesting how some people will tweet out, you know, they'll have their Twitter profile and they won't actually have any links to any of their artworks. Like, because I've had that with some guests, hey, for my podcast, where because I like to look up their work before the show kind of idea.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where the hell is this person's art? It happens more often than you'd think.
Really? Yeah, maybe that's a NFT space thing, you know, because you can, of course, you can be anonymous. So I'm also, the NFT space is quite new to me. I started that off in February.
Yeah.
Thanks to Ruby, who is still connecting his audio.
Yeah.
But since 2007, I've been an artist.
2007. Okay.
Yeah.
So sorry, I was just messaging Ruby about asking about the audio, but so since 2007, you've done this as a profession kind of idea.
Yeah.
Okay. And from that point on, you were creating, like, a lot of your work is kind of a collage style type idea. Was it physical medium then?
Yeah, I started off with flower still lives. And these were pretty much collages. I took something out of the containers or some junk I found. And that was so it was... it wasn't worth anything, it was junk. And I felt it was funny to add value to that. And you know, back in those days, I was pretty much intrigued between the kitsch that you find in trader parks and stuff, and with the Dutch flower still life genre. The one is respected very much, and the other, of course, isn't. And I wanted to make work that is just between them in the middle.
Okay.
So I did that for 5 years, and then I wanted to do something else. And I was searching for a new theme, and I found it in the Middle Ages, actually. So that's my current thing.
Right, yeah. And you've done some stuff. The name of the artist, I can't believe I can't remember the name. But you did that really cool one of, it's on Hikkitnunk. Let me look at the title of it.
Dauren Dürer.
Yeah, Dürer is the one I was thinking
Albrecht
of.
Albrecht Dürer.
Yes. Oh, you say that so more nicely than I do. I don't have the right pronunciation.
That's my German coming through now.
Hey, guys, can you hear me? Or
I can hear you. Hey, there we go.
Wow. my excuses.
Welcome.
Yes, I just dropped in Albrecht Dürer.
Oh, hey, yes. Okay. Good timing. I wish I could speak some Dutch. We could just go full on Dutch in this podcast.
Yeah, I don't think your audience will. Laten
we dat gewoon doen. Hey, Niels, alles goed? Die kleine, alles goed hier.
Sorry.
Dutch will kill you.
I don't even know how to say I don't understand in Dutch.
Ik snap er geen reet van.
I'm not even going to try to say that.
Nice.
So audience might not realize this was kind of a guild drop-in podcast. Now, being that Niels was the first here, we just started it off as a Niels podcast, and now of course Ruby's joining us, and now it's a guild podcast.
Yeah, thanks for joining in, Ruby, because I was under fire here.
Yeah.
No, you're on the fire. Great. That's always good.
All this pressure to talk.
were you able maneuver between the bullets like Neo could, or
I don't
Neo
follow.
From the Matrix?
Oh yeah, for sure. He was very evasive.
Evasive, that's the word. Yeah, great. Thanks.
So yeah, this is kind of a drop-in guild chat here today on NFP. And Ruby, you join us. Now, of course, can you say your name for the audience instead of me trying to say it and butchering it?
Oh, well, Rutger van der Tas, that will be the Dutch way. And people also know me as Dr. Rudy.
Mm-hmm. Was I saying Ruby instead of Rudy?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay.
That's my bad. I thought you went by the name Ruby.
Rudy. Okay, Rudy.
Rudy.
Sorry about that. No hey, worries. We're learning lots today.
I'm listening to a lot of names, so that's fine.
Yeah. Now, people, I was telling people they could find Niels on Twitter at BROSZAT, Brozat, and they can find you at Rutger van der Tas, RUTGERVANDERTAS, yeah?
Yeah.
And of course, we're members of the guild. And so we've got lots on the go with the guild lately. What are you guys? Here's the thing. So much of that stuff is kind of like secret. And then there's the stuff that's out there. It's like, which ones can I mention and which ones can I not mention right now? We do have the Gigi Buffon piece. You were a part of that, right, Rudy?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's all getting put together with charged particles.
True. Yeah.
How did you like working on that project?
Full focused on the visibility of the portrait of Gigi Buffon, instead of going for mixing faces and going for distortion.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very literally clear picture for me.
It was beautiful.
To work on it. Yeah, it was also trying new layers.
Yeah, I saw that.
And how to work with Procreate on the iPad. So it was trying something new.
Mm-hmm. I'm all about the layers, man. I love layers on Procreate.
Yeah. You work on Procreate as well.
Pretty much exclusively.
All right, not on a computer or laptop.
No, I mean prior to Procreate, I used my phone. That was how I created everything. Hey, we got visuals. Nice.
Yeah.
Right on. I'm not just talking to a black screen anymore.
No, I was looking for my good microphone, which, but yeah, I found the gaming set of my son.
Oh, nice. So, that's why the audio connecting took a while.
So you haven't seen me? Okay.
No, I know. I just got a black screen. You know, I figured, you want... Oh, hey, there we go.
I thought we had eye contact the entire time. Sorry.
Maybe I should have mentioned it, but I just sometimes, I assume, okay, well, maybe their privacy is important to them, you know?
Oh, I thought it was just because it was the two of us. It's just an automatic Zoom thing. So you were talking to black screen.
It's all good.
I apologize.
No, yeah, no, it's good. So you got your headset all set up and your son's into gaming, obviously. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to get him into blockchain gaming. So he might earn while playing.
Okay. And which games are piquing your interest?
I've been looking at the Axie game.
Okay.
And I think Hodl God may be interesting as well.
Hodl God is cool. Now I'm past the age of being able to play that kind of game anymore with any level of success.
Yeah,
it's the sort of game that where as soon as I see somebody, I'm dead usually.
Yeah, you're too late. Yeah.
Or I'm dead before I see them. That happens just as often. I see them in the replay of the death, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got the same thing. Yeah. Sometimes I make a new account on Fortnite and we play together and he's pretty good at it. So we get a lot of kills because you start as a newbie. When you make
So because you start at lower rank.
Yeah. 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 You get higher when you get more kills and more wins.
Isn't that called smurfing or something like that when people do that? Isn't that what that is?
Smurfing.
Smurfing is when you are a good player, I believe. I could be wrong. I'm too old to actually know the correct terminology. But you basically start at like rank one and you just go in and just destroy people.
Yeah. Yeah. But then he's taking his father with him.
You're just kind of like the escort, like the
I'm searching for the keys in the middle and I'm sort of walking behind him. Yeah, definitely. I'm not good at that.
It's good. It's fun to play with your kids though. I played Halo with my kids when they were younger a lot.
Cool.
Yeah
I've got little... other parents, friends' parents who play Halo with their kids, which are but we normally play FIFA.
Okay yeah.
And in the beginning, I used to let him win, but now when I win, I feel like
you're like, yes, yeah. You parade around
motivated. Yeah,
I almost threw away the controller last week because I was almost going to win, but then
there was someone on Twitter the other day who was saying, oh, any adult who's still playing video games, you know, you're wasting your life. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's
definitely
fun.
Not.
It's a fun thing, especially with your family, friends.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Even Jerry Saltz plays games.
Is that right?
On Instagram to keep him motivated to do a difficult task, like writing an article. So he plays, I think, Solitude or Solitaire. What's the
Solitaire?
Game
yes.
Solitaire, yeah. Not more than three games because then you are like playing 50 probably.
Okay.
So yeah.
Funny.
And I remember a time that it was pretty shameful, you know, that you admitted to play games, but I thought these days were like long gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's far behind us, I guess.
Yeah, I think as a connection, especially like as a parent with your kids, is a super fun way to connect with them, especially like if it's like a split screen type thing where you're sitting there on the couch together or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I cannot make that jump. You know, I tried Fortnite 2 with my son and he was like 8. He was just starting. So you give that remote to me, my son. I played Super Mario 3. Give it here. Yeah. Little did I know.
Played Minecraft with them, you know, and all that kind of stuff. They love that. I mean, that game had some longevity. They played that for years, that game.
Yeah, we try to do it as well, but he thinks it's too boring.
Mm. Yeah, I hear you. There's kind of there's modes in it where you can play against other people and stuff that are kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let's talk art. I mean, that's kind of what this is about here. Here we are, all guild members. We talked about the Buffon piece, but now, Rudy, let me ask you. I mean, obviously, you have pieces on Super Rare, Async. What's going on lately with you, with your creations?
Well, the time that I have is mainly absorbed by working on some secret projects with the guild.
Exactly. I know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
We have a podcast here where we can't talk about all the stuff we're working on.
No, but it's pretty, well, for us, it's an immense leap forward from where we came from, starting with the Blind Potato in September, October last year. And, going through different phases together and members coming and going, and there's some sort of core group which is still there. And getting all these new opportunities with more commercial commercial companies, which are all already working on blockchain and have their own niche in something, and then they want to connect with us, and we can vet some artists that might be interesting for them to work with. So it's growing pretty fast, actually.
The growth is enormously quick.
How old is the guild? I don't even know.
Well, before me, I think there was a little group, and they were all brought together by Talos. He was sort of the initiator of the guild. He brought people together, and we started with a hot potato. Hot potato style, right? And that were the first ones that we did on Rarible.
Right.
And that was, really interesting. And then, we sort of grew into doing other sort of pieces as well. Instead of the hot potato, more theme-like art. And then came the opportunity to work on a piece for Async. And that was very, very cool.
Was that the Nightwatch piece then?
Yeah.
How long ago is that? Is that like last year?
Yeah, the Nightwatch, I had the idea in October. I took all the characters from the piece and made the background in sliced up in three pieces and made some sort of structure in which the artist could work. And then we found, 33 different artists. Through a randomizer, we gave all the pieces to the different artists. So no one could say, I want to be the one in front, or I want to be the girl in the back, or I want to have the dog, which is not visible anymore, or something else. So no one was really able to pick its place. From there we made some sort of a new start as well with Shinji as our leader. He's the leader of the pack. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but he's the one who's doing a lot behind the scenes, building the website, having connections with all the other companies that we're working with as well. Same for Jetski. She is also very, very active. And Mohawk is really the one with the mathematical solutions for a lot of things. So it's really like, we're the core four people. And I think it's we're trying things out. It's trial and error, but it's really worth seeing where we're going.
Mm-hmm. Now that was, I believe, the Nightwatch was the largest collaborative creation on Async, I think, ever, at least on Async.
Yeah, I think it's the largest on Async, and it was also with the highest dollar amount of a sale price.
Mm-hmm. It was substantial. It was like $150,000, I feel, something like that range.
Yeah.
True. So, amazing. And following that, there was, what was the piece that followed that one? Remind me.
I'm not sure. I think it's Pandora's Box.
And, yes.
Pieces on some pieces on the charged particles.
Mm-hmm.
and we are still heavily involved with things they do, and we are watching each other and passing interesting collaborations over the table to see if we can do more on their platform.
Mm-hmm. And I was saying to Niels before the show, I was saying it's funny because I'm not sure exactly which things I can talk about and which things have to be kept secret. And that's, I'm always kind of pulled by that. I'm sure you experience this as well in your work, or maybe there's collaborations you have where you can't say them because you're excited about it. You're like, oh, I'm really excited about this collaborative work or whatever, but you have to kind of keep it mum. That's, it's a challenge for me.
I can imagine that's a challenge. I don't feel that that excitement. I'm just focused on building the piece and making it as good as we can, and try to make no errors when you mint. There's always the risk of making error in the name or in the layer or in whatever. So I'm more stressed about that than keeping it secret.
Some of these collaborative works, you've got so many pieces. Because, like, for example, with that Night Watch, there were 33 artists, but then there were three different states for each person, correct?
True, yeah. Yeah. And then you had some artists had also given the title for the layers, and then there were descriptions as well. And then you had to make sure that all the ETH addresses were the right addresses because they are baked into the smart contract. So when a sale goes through, all the artists get paid at once. So many things to worry about instead of being extremely happy about the piece that's coming up.
If you finish a piece for yourself, because Darren, I'm with you on this. If I finish a piece, I have this, you know, I try to keep my cool too, you know, not mint it just right away or show it to the world. Uh-huh. I've always had like a week at minimum before I show something. But Rudy, how is that for you? Is that if you have a painting, are you then excited to show it to the world, or does it not affect you at all?
I think I'm sort of happy when it goes to the public. Really extremely excited. That was only in the beginning, like in 2019 when I first minted my pieces on Super Rare. That excitement is some sort of gone. It's more focused on not producing or not minting too much and trying to get better at using certain tools and trying to find the language which is worth using in the digital space. So it's more an investigation. And then every now and again, I mint a piece, and that's actually a part of the road that I follow while I try out new things. So it's like sketches that are works, and they are all together are the body of work, which is actually just one piece. Is that understandable?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. I tend to be on the side of probably minting too much, but you know, I've learned to be okay about it.
Yeah, and I think there are different.
I mint a lot.
Yeah, you can approach stuff differently in life, right? We mm-hmm. have the saying there are different ways that roads that lead to Rome. If you, for instance, think of a photographer, you know, you have these photographers that will put everything in place, wait for the sun to be exact at the right spot. They are in control of everything, and then they click and they have this beautiful picture. And then you have photographers that shoot like 10,000 images and will choose the absolute best one. You know, both mm-hmm. are great, probably. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's a different approach.
Sure. I mean, I'm reminded of have you heard of Max Capacity? I've had him on my show before. He takes like video footage from like the 80s, mostly VHS footage, and he plays it, and he uses like circuit bending and stuff to alter the image, and he'll play it. He'll record for hours. Okay.
Wow.
And then he'll go back and find just that little clip and, you know, go, oh, that one's, that bit there is perfect. You know,
wow.
He comes up with really cool stuff, but What you don't know is the hours and hours and hours of playback that he's scanning through to find those little gems, right?
Yeah.
I think I have a similar way of working. I'm really excited when I'm only focused on working, just finding pieces that I want to draw on, also like making a GIF animation. It also takes a lot of time compiling all the artwork. Sometimes I have almost finished pieces lying around for months, sometimes a year, and then I bring them back into Adobe After Effects, and then I add some new stuff, and then cut that up, render it, and then bring it back again, speed up something, add another image, and then sometimes I feel a click, and then it's good. Otherwise, I just have to put it in the fridge for another few months, and then pick it up later again.
That's cool. What do you think of this just kind of growth of, you mentioned kind of the commercial side of things? You know, what are your thoughts on balancing that with, you know, keeping your artistic kind of integrity to things and also kind of, you know, getting involved in some of these commercial promotions? Where do you feel comfortable with that?
I understand the question. I think while working for the guild, having these commercial opportunities is really something that I think helps broaden the NFT space, NFT space overall. So I think it's needed to get these commercial works to the broader public, to eventually draw them in to buy more art or use the blockchain and the advantages of it in their daily lives. So I think it's just a part of something we have to be happy with, that they are there. It's not that secret and a spot where you can walk around from. It's there and it's in your face and it's all over the place, and we have to find the best ways of using it. And these commercial assignments that we do are part of the job. And going back to find how to find the balance between my own creativity or doing commercial work. When I do a commercial piece, I have almost the same way of producing it, but because it's for something which is for a broader public, I cannot cut it up and make it strange or do something with it which I would normally do with my work. So parts of the commercial work I can later turn, twist, break, tore up, and make something new with it, and then it's my creative process with that. So I think they're going hand in hand at this moment.
Niels, do you do much other commission work, or is it pretty much just your own creations?
Pretty much my own creations, only with the guild. But I agree with what Rudy says, is that there are no restrictions, you know. The only thing, of course, there are always restrictions and you need them. So I want to know what the canvas size will be that I'm working on. Is it a static image or is it a moving image? You know, stuff like that, like the technical aspects. But there's no one who says what I should make or how I should make it. And that feels great. It does, I also believe is that, you know, this is all so new, and especially for me, I'm the young bee between the three of us here.
Is that right?
You guys are longer. And Rudy brought me into the space.
Okay.
Yeah, buddy. And you've been doing this podcast far longer than I've been into
alive.
So yeah, go figure. But I've seen so much growth already since February, and This is heading towards becoming matured and grown up, you know. And now we have the opportunity, and especially as the guild, to help shape that into the right way. And that's a really, really fruitful ground, you know. That's so cool. I'm really happy to support that. Yeah. And cool, I can say the people that that are involved in the guild are like really, really kind and genuine people. You know, on the Discord, we talk about the most beautiful stuff. You know, how to be honest, to educate ourselves, to keep the crypto world clean. And I was talking to, I was listening to a YouTube channel earlier today that Shinji promoted. It was like 3 hours of Elon Musk talking and then reviewing. And like, oh man, it was too much. After 20 minutes, I had to do something else. But it's very educational. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the inclusion element is really a strong point of the guild for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that element of leadership in the in NFT art is... it's a privilege to be a part of that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very cool. Mm. What do you think of all these? I mean, it happens with the guild. It happens with guild members. What do you think of this where, I don't know if it's happened to you personally, but I've gotten lots of these kind of scammy, hey, you know, we'd like to hire you to create this and that art or whatever. Has this happened to you guys where you, they try to get your information or your wallets or whatever?
No.
Hasn't happened to you? Oh, wow. Okay.
No. What I do get is collaboration requests by people I met on Clubhouse.
Yep.
And I met a very, very nice and talented woman named Kenza, and she was promoting my work for free and also other work. And she did such an elegant job. So I messaged her and asked her if she wanted to be my crypto art agent. And she said, yes. So I'm very, very happy with that. And she helps me with strategies. And
so you have like a social media manager?
Yeah.
Basically?
Yeah.
That's like why I spend half my day doing that stuff.
Yeah, I do it myself. But she helps me. She helps it echo in the in space, but also with a strategy, and that is such a great help. Yeah, I'm really
let's
really
talk strategy for people who are kind of new to the space and they're listening to this podcast and listening to artists. What are some of your most effective strategies, you feel?
So you're addressing me?
Yeah, in terms of, you know, promoting your work.
Okay, so first I was like, oh my god, this is new, this is cool, I'm gonna do everything, you know. That wasn't a good strategy. I didn't know how to price my work, so I priced it just the same as I priced my tangible work. That's that's just a bit too high, you know. I'm starting all over again in this space, and I'm cool with that. So I've never been a cheap artist, and I still am not, I think, but I lowered my price quite a bit and do like editions of 10 on Ticketnunk, which started off with 1 Tezos and they sold out very, very soon, quick, and then 3 Tezos. And now I'm gonna do a drop with 5 Tezos. So if they sell out the same evening, or then you know the price is good, and you can increase the price a bit. And if it takes like a long period before you sell out, you know, you have to keep at that level, I think, with the pricing. So I have these editions of 10, which are cheap, and then I have like my genuine pieces that are more expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rudy, you're also on Ticketnunk, right?
Yeah, tried something out.
What's your feelings on it? I feel like it's kind of quieted down a lot ever since they had that, you know, problem.
Yeah,
I haven't seen. I'll admit, you know, I didn't even go swap everything again afterwards. I think I still have a bunch of stuff on there that's not even for sale yet because I'm just like, eh, I'll get around to it.
Do it.
What about you, Rudy? What's your experience with Hen?
I actually like it as a place to stroll and see pieces that are just minted. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see fresh works. Yeah, for myself, I don't really feel like I should mint a lot pieces on many different platforms. So last year, I think September, October last year, 2020, I minted a few pieces on Rarible, but I didn't feel very comfortable with it. But I did decide for myself that Rarible would be the place where I would mint multiples. And for now, I think the multiples will be on Hikatnunk. So I found a new place for my multiples. If I do them, they will be there.
Right, because Super Rare is exclusively one of ones, correct?
Yeah, yeah, I really like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on Known Origin. I kind of have the option, and sometimes it's a dilemma, I feel, like on Known Origin, because when I first was on it, I was like, oh, I kind of want this to be my one of ones. But then over time, I'm like, I don't know, though. This one feels like a... I don't know if you have that. I have that with certain pieces where I kind of feel like this feels like a multi-edition piece. I don't know why, but I get that sometimes.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I sometimes feel that thing that the still frame picture should be one-on-one, and then the animated pieces are more... Of an edition, but I'm not sure about it yet. I haven't found the right strategy for multiples or single editions. And I'm also thinking about a new piece on async as well. So when I have the time to work again, I think I'll be focusing on an async piece.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we all are multi-platform artists. How many platforms is too many platforms? I don't know where the limit is. I don't know where to stop. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, it really depends also on what the platform brings to your work.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've got the single editions are for Super Rare. Then the pieces where I can completely go wild with different layers and stuff and see if I can find ingredients in the images that could tell their own story if you compile them in a different way on async.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really powerful stuff. Then Hikatnunk for a more open works. I'm not sure if they are, but it feels a bit like that. And then we've got charged particles it's DeFi art,
right?
DeFi and art. So it's differently orientated, but there are also some nice features with nesting pieces inside a piece. So I'm also thinking about something for the guild as well for the future to do another piece there. But yeah, obviously we don't have the time for that right now. But when the time comes, we'll invite you definitely.
cool. Well, yeah. I wanted to ask you both about process, like in terms of what are you doing as a process to create your art? What tools do you use? Maybe Rudy, we can start with you. You talked a little bit about Procreate, but for the most part, what's your usual creation process?
I create parts, actually, constantly a piece of a portrait, a piece of clothing. Sometimes I paint, sometimes I draw, sometimes I glue them together, sometimes I cut it open again, and then I start modeling with clay, like real clay. I take pictures of the clay, I use the clay in pieces. Sometimes I make little films in the backyard when I burn something, and that burning could be a piece. In addition to, I done it for a work on async.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, everything could be in there, but most of the time it's around humans or characters or family members or things that I've gone through with people that I love. So it's pretty. It's very.
You mix the tangible drawing and painting together with digital enhancements, right? It starts off, yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah, actually, nothing is forbidden. All can be included, and it's like going. I don't know what what's the right way of making it clear, but I'm just collecting a lot of images, either it's a drawing, a painting, or a photograph, or a sketch on a Procreate, or a piece of sculpture that I'm making in Nomad on my iPad. They all come together when the time is there to work with them. I just sometimes I don't know what to work on, and then I just go through the library of things that I have. And then I find things that I sort of connect to on that moment. And then I start working on them, and then they are a layer for a new piece. Or I just work on them, and then suddenly there's a moment, and I think, oh, it's okay like this. I can leave it. And then I just have to leave it for a few days or months sometimes. And then I know it's good, when nothing is irritating me, or, there are no question marks on the piece. So
with that, like, I know for myself, I tend to have a bit of an organized mess way of doing things, where I have like a million different images or whatever. Do you have a way that you organize that, or is it more like you kind of just browse through those pieces and go, oh, I think that'll fit with that piece or whatever?
Yeah, there's no order. Mm. Yeah.
So like me.
Total chaos.
If people look at my like Google Drive, it's a total disaster.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes get the message that I have to delete some stuff. So
I just make a new Gmail. I have like I have a ton of them.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, this Gmail's running out of space. Time for a new one. Yeah. How about you, Niels? Are you more the organized type, or sorry, Rudy, I interrupted you.
Yeah, I'm chaotic in my head.
Okay.
So I learned when I was studying as a graphic designer. I started out as a graphic designer before I went to art school. Mm-hmm. I learned to be like to organize everything in a manner that other people can work with it too.
Okay.
And so I stick to what I've learned first most of the time. But I like to be totally chaotic and impulsive in my art. So I guess I need that structure a little bit. But I use Illustrator, Adobe Illustrator, Photoshop, InDesign not so much for making art. But when I use them, I could use, well, for instance, in Photoshop, I could use also parts of pictures I have of previous artworks. But I like to create, so I'm not using that as much. I really like to paint with my mouse.
And, oh, really? Interesting. I can't stand painting with the mouse.
No, me neither. Yeah. It's really annoying.
Yeah.
It is.
That's very interesting.
I miss the directness of it.
Yes.
Looking at things that come out of your hands.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Interesting. Tell me about that. How you enjoy drawing with the mouse. Okay.
I have a trackpad. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's my finger is my pen. But it's not ideal. I guess maybe in the future I need to get myself some better equipment. But for now, this will do.
See, even like drawing with like the Wacom, I find I don't even like that. Because it's still not, like Rudy was saying, it's still not you touch the pen and it's there on the surface. You know what I'm saying? There's still this disconnect that I just can't get over that.
No, it's the same thing. I tried it. But now with the new iPad, it really feels like I'm drawing. But then instead of the paper, which get a bit warmer when you are on the same spot, the iPad really gets hot.
Mm-hmm.
Are like really scratching it, but yeah, it's really nice, and it's also nice to be able to work in layers and then see if it's if it could be a GIF animation as well at the same time.
Right.
New flows.
Yeah. And so, Niels, are you're not in the land of iPad yet? You haven't picked up an iPad yet?
No, I had it very early on. I had an iPad, but that thing passed away.
iPad.
Yeah, it died. I guess I just have to make a little bit more crypto money before I can afford to buy it.
Just write it off.
Yeah.
Business expense.
It is. I will write it off.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
But so I can manage it still.
Go ahead, sorry.
I can manage, you know. I try to be as freely as possible when using your materials to work with art. So if I, for instance, if I work with real materials, then oftentimes I don't know how it works. So the first time I did like an egg tempera painting, or I work with concrete, or I work with ceramics, it's always a first time. And I don't really mind, you know, because my work is also, just like Rudy, a lot about the process. And I embrace mistakes because then the work can surprise me. Mm. So it's if you look at my, you could say that my paintings, for instance, are like fixated chaos. I like to change the balance in a painting and then try to force it to go the other way and see where it clicks.
So yeah. When you're creating those pieces, is it just spontaneity then? You're not really like planning, yeah. And then you just kind of see where it goes?
Yeah. I know, for instance, I have an ongoing series that I call Icons. Mm-hmm. I know when it's going to be an icon on forehand. And I have like this vague idea. Today I feel like making a green painting. Mm. And then like 5 minutes in, it's become to be a black painting, you know?
Okay.
So I'm really, really free to switch my ideas.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, almost always, if I'm doing spontaneous stuff, it's almost always some kind of portrait. And it's, you know, something that I just make up as I go, which brings me back to my childhood, because that's what I did in school during class. Is all the margins of my papers were always just pictures of faces, superheroes, like whatever. And so I just find that I just enjoy that. And it's just, you know, it's an escape from time.
Yeah.
I love these doodles.
They're
I love
fun.
Escaping.
Yeah. So what are you excited about coming up right now? I want to ask each of you, like, what are you working on right now? Maybe let's start with Rudy.
Oh, again? Yeah, yeah, well, I'm pretty excited about what we are doing with the guild. It'll come out in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
And it'll be a start. In a new realm, giving us new opportunities, and it'll be a series as well. So more artists will be able to join this work what we're doing. I really have no idea about the impact it will have, but for me it feels like we're building a new mountain to work on. I'm not sure if that's a good way of saying it, but that's for the guild. What I'm very excited about, and for my own work, I'm going to have a small exhibition space in the center of Haarlem here, in my hometown. And
cool.
You're talking physical exhibition.
A physical exhibition, very small. It's near the town hall. Mm-hmm. It's actually tied to the town hall, but never mind that. It's a small place, and I'm going to use my 3D sculpting pieces. I'm going to let them be printed, so I can print the sculptures. I'm going to make animations of them too, so there'll be a screen, and they also will be NFTs. So it'll be like these three things visible in an art space.
Just getting back into the physical space is so nice, right? Like,
definitely.
After having had this period of time where we couldn't be. Sorry, true. Niels, you were going to say?
Yeah, because Rudy lives in Haarlem. Mm-hmm. Most of us know Haarlem, of course, but the original Haarlem is such a beautiful city. Are you renting your own space for how long you want, or is it an already existing exhibition space?
It's an existing exhibition space. It's part of you can use it, or you get asked for it to make an exhibition for 2 months.
Is it the Vis Hall?
So It's part of the Vishal or the Kunstlijn. It's not the Vishal itself, but it's pretty nice. It's going to be from October till December, and I'll be promoting it on Twitter for all my American fellows and people from India and South Africa who can come, of course.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
I don't think a lot of people from outside will come, though. But,
might be difficult.
I'm not
Everyone
sure
is welcome.
Yeah, not from outside our country, of course, but Haarlem has such a great artistic scene. These are so, you know, talented artists, but also very friendly. And I love going to Haarlem. It really feels like home. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Thanks.
I really mean it. Yeah.
Awesome. Niels, how about you? What are you working on
right now? Yeah, I found myself a church near the city of The Hague. And I am going to rent that for a weekend to make an exhibition for myself. So that's also a tangible exhibition, but I want to mix that, of course, also with NFTs, because that's something that really, really took me. You know, I'm really full of it right now. So I like it. I love it. And I want to show the mixture of it. But I also have some works that are finished that I really want to mint. I cannot wait for it. So I'm going to drop this Sunday. It's going to be an edition, 5 tezos, edition of 10. Mm-hmm. So that's still affordable. And then the week after, I want to probably, or either I go on a holiday, or I'm going to drop a one of one. And that's then going to be the expensive piece. But I have, you know, it's, yeah, I really want to get that out in the world. I like that one a lot. Yeah.
And this is one that's pretty much done now, or?
Yeah, so it was already done in April, I think. So waiting. You know, follow the strategy, follow the plan.
And I'm curious, like, what's the waiting for? Like, why wait so long?
Because I had other works that came first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I want to make a book. And I have lots of plans always.
You
want to
make a book?
Yeah.
Okay. Like an art book kind of thing, just full of your works or writing, novel type thing, or what?
No. It's just artworks. I talked about the Icons series. So I did a couple of years ago. I made a small book with all the icons I painted, but I have now twice as much, and I also found some people, some real cool people who want to write small essays and to do the graphic design for me. So hopefully I can start making that like after the summer.
Okay.
Yeah, it will be cool.
Awesome.
For me, most work is done already. So yeah.
Okay.
Pictures are already in. The information is done. It's cool.
So it's a go. It's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can accompany your book with some NFTs of the pictures that are in there.
Yeah. I have to think about that, though. But I have time. First things first.
Darren, what are you excited about?
I just finished a collaboration with Ali Sabet that I'm going to be minting on Known Origin. Mm-hmm. So I'm super pumped about that. He was such a pleasant person to work with, and he was on my podcast a little while ago, and I just love his style. And I was like, oh man, I would love to create something with you, because we both kind of like the feminine portrait kind of pieces. And so it fit together beautifully. So I'm really excited about that. And of course, all this guild stuff going on is exciting, you know, and being a part of that is a thrill. I look at the people in the guild and I'm like, what an awesome group of people. So it's just a thrill to be a part of that. Yeah. And my podcast is growing. I just got a sponsor. So
congratulations.
I'm super excited about that. I can't
cool.
say anything about it yet, because we're still working on kind of getting
You're so on topic
place.
With that.
Are you going to pop the Pop Telegraph, or?
Pardon me?
Are you going to be the Pop Telegraph, or?
Well, it's basically... I can't say. I have to hold it. I have to hold off on saying.
But I'm excited about it. It's actually a really interesting platform. What I wanted for a sponsor was one that I personally would use. You see, I didn't want a sponsor to be something where it's like, hey, this is a great product, you know, and I don't actually believe in it. You know what I mean? So I'm just excited that it's a sponsor where I actually do want to participate in the platform. And it's got some pretty cool applications, but I'll hold that until everything's sorted out with that.
Congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's exciting. So yeah, lots of stuff going on with that too. So yeah, I'm thrilled to be a part of all of this stuff. You know, this was not something that I did for a living up until, you know, more recently, where I could actually say, hey, I'm an artist. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I was an artist in terms of my own enjoyment, right? But to do it as an actual thing where it's a source of income and where people are looking at my work and consuming my work, that's a relatively new phenomenon for me, you know? So it's just awesome to be a part of that. So, yeah. And I'm going to keep doing the podcast. It's fun. I love connecting with other artists, and it's a great way to kind of build my network.
Yeah. It's a great way for us to be, because I've been listening to your podcast. Also because Rudy said, you know, listen to this. So you set me up real good. Yeah, that's the honest truth. So this is the first time we talk, but your voice is very familiar to me. This is so funny to see the face now to it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, it's fun to have you on, and we can definitely do this again in the future. And I just want to say, I feel like it's a real privilege for me to be a part of this whole guild experience. So thanks for being a part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got the same feeling.
Yeah.
It's really, it's a special time.
For sure. Yeah. Well, hey, awesome. Good luck with everything going on. And I wish you luck, but that means good luck for me too, because I'm a part of it. So.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Luck to us.
Good luck to us.
Wow.
Right on. Okay, all the best. Take care.
Yeah. Thank you so much, man.
Nice speaking to you. Have fun.
Yeah, take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again for listening to the Non-Fungible Podcast. See you again soon.